The following podcast is a production of the Washington College of Law at American University. Any unauthorized use or distribution is strictly prohibited.
Their bios are... Okay, they're down here. And, yeah, I'm not going to be through them. They'll tell you more about themselves in their opening introductory remarks as they talk about agencies they're from or the Supreme Court, how they got there, what they do there, and perhaps how each of you, if you're interested in Jewish federal government and or the public sector in general, that you can take going forward to make yourself the strongest candidate possible. The program actually started out as part of the 3L4L career workshop series, but given its broader appeal, we wanted to open up to a larger category, exactly to a whole school, because there's relevance here for obviously the first and the second as well. But with respect to that series, I just wanted to make a side note that we have two more programs for the 3 and 4L career workshop coming up on March 29th, dealing with the long-distance job search, and then on April 12th, working with legal headhunters and temporary agencies. For all of you, however, some first year, second year, 3L, leading business students, 4L, I want to bring to your special attention a program by Donna Gerson happening on March 28th. She's rather prolific in the field of job search strategies for small and mid-sized firms. I just want to bring those programs to your attention. But today we are going to be addressing public sector of careers and division. I'll only introduce them by name to say, and then we'll roll out further their bios in the context of today's goals and finding out what it's like to work in federal government in general, what it's like to work with these specific agencies of support, and career trajectories they're from, as well as how to get on in from the beginning. Okay? We certainly want to hear from the panel that Rich used to say, but we also want it to be interactive. We want to hear from you. We want to make sure we're being responsive to your questions. It's not uninteresting to note that upon graduation each year, about 25 to 30% of our graduates go on to careers in the public sector, federal government, interest, state government, etc. Reason being, they are pretty darn good careers, actually, with ask the panel about their careers. Of course, I've been in the career, we want to try to expose as much as possible. But for the greatest extent, I not only work with the alumni, I work with federal agencies, there's tremendous career satisfaction in working in the public sector, in the federal government specifically, but also, as I said, in the public interest sector, state government, too. Certainly, career upward career mobility, both within the federal government and beyond the private sector. Perhaps we'll address a little bit of that too. But as I said, we're not here, and you know, we're not here to listen to me dabble. I'm going to quickly now hand it on over and just go down the line to introduce each of our panelists. Marlon Howe is the senior counsel to the director, division of market relations, U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission. She's with the U.S. Federal Trade Commission. As Molly's left is Cynthia Rock, who is the Deputy Clerk with the United States Supreme Court. And our last panelist, Dan Halapy, is the Deputy Assistant General Counsel for the Central Compliance Branch, which is the Division of If I may, let's just go down the panel that way and lead us off with, give us a snapshot of the agency.
Hello, everybody. I don't know if you can hear me. I'm at the SEC, so I'll give a very brief snapshot in the 5 minutes allocated. Notes behind you, they're what we do. So whoever was in this class before, I'm sure that conversation is very relevant. Basically, we are described as the investor's advocate. We help protect the markets, regulate the markets, helps the markets be efficient and encourage competition in the markets. We do that through interacting with a number of market participants, including the issuers, which is the companies that issue stocks. We also do that by interfacing with the intermediaries, like the brokers, the investment advisors, and the markets themselves. And we also have offices that help those core programs advance. I have a pamphlet here, Invest in Your Legal Career at the SEC, that I think can explain a lot of this stuff much more eloquently than I can. But it goes into all of our operating divisions and divisions that I mentioned that help those operating divisions, like International Affairs and General Counsel's Office. I am in the Division of Market Regulation, and as the title suggests, we regulate the markets and the financial intermediaries in the markets, like the brokers and the dealers in the marketplace. No surprise, that's a hot issue these days. New York Stock Exchange and Euronext announced their recent merger, so we've got a lot of international action going on. Broker dealers are long been multinational. It's hard to say Goldman Sachs is a U.S. Broker dealer anymore. Their footprint is really global. What that presents is a lot of challenges for us in the U.S. Because our laws, of course, regulate the U.S. market. In a sense, though, we tend to regulate the world financial markets, and that's an issue for a lot of debate, and it causes for some very interesting days for the SEC. So, I think the last thing you asked was, how did I get there? little story, fireside chat. I'm an unlikely person in government. I did not start in government. And the one thing I have kept consistent is that I've done securities law since I graduated from law school. So I've been a corporate and securities attorney, started in transactional work. This is during the hot IPO times. I was not sleeping very much, doing a lot of initial public offerings, secondary offerings of, at that time, hot tech companies, a lot of dot-coms that I will not name because they may no longer be around. But it was fun. It was a lot of fun working with them, a lot of vibrant young folks that were raising capital and had some great ideas. Quickly moved into litigation, and so I did defense litigation work for representing essentially boards of directors or representing issuers or banks, actually investment banks, in lawsuits, usually private lawsuits, but at times lawsuits against the SEC. I had long wanted to join the SEC, but my attempts were not met with the success that I had hoped. Last attempt was very positive, and once I got an offer from the SEC, I quickly moved there a few years ago, and have been thrilled with my career at the SEC.
Hi, I'm Molly Crawford, and I'm a staff attorney at the Federal Trade Commission. The Federal Trade Commission is the nation's consumer protection agency. And our primary goal is to protect consumers from unfair or deceptive acts or practices in or affecting commerce. We basically do that through three main bureaus at our agency. The first is the Bureau of Competition, which looks at mergers and acquisitions and sort of does antitrust work. The second is through the Bureau of Economics, which is made up of economists, actually, and they do a lot of policy work. They also assist attorneys in their investigations to provide market analysis. And then finally, there's the Bureau of Consumer Protection, which I work in. I work in the Division of Privacy and Identity Protection, which is one of the newest divisions at the agency, and we are tasked with doing work in the area of privacy, data security, and identity theft. We do a lot of work in enforcement. We investigate companies' information security practices. We investigate data breaches. We do a lot of policy work by assisting industry, Congress, the President, a number of different individuals develop policies for privacy protection, and then we also do a lot of education and outreach with both businesses and consumers. I really love the work that I do. I'm, as you can tell by everyone else's title, I'm the junior lawyer on this panel, and I'm a 2002 graduate, so a pretty newbie, and it's a lot of fun. Most of what I do is conduct investigations into companies' information security practices. We're a really small division of about 30 lawyers, and early on you get a lot of responsibility to conduct these investigations, and we really become sort of experts in this growing field. I'm sure you all read the newspaper. How I got there. Well, as I said, I graduated in 2002 from AU. I had a federal clerkship for a year out in the Northern District of Virginia, and then went into private practice, like a lot of people do, at a law firm here in D.C. There I did mostly tobacco litigation at the appellate level, and I did that for about a year and a half. It was very interesting, and it was a great experience, but I think, like my colleague, I was sleepy, and I wanted something to be a little bit more, to be more meaningful in my career, and I actually called Matthew and tried to elicit some help, and he assisted me putting my resume packet together, and one thing led to another, and I got in touch with a former colleague who was also from my law firm, who happened to be hiring in the FTC, so I went on an interview, and I've been there for 2 years.
Glad I got to you before the pizza got here and all chaos breaks out. I think people know or are familiar with the Supreme Court, so I don't think I need to go into too much detail about what the Supreme Court does. Hopefully by now you all know that. The clerk's office is about 30 employees. Only four of us in that office are lawyers, though. The clerk of the court is an attorney, the chief deputy clerk, myself, and then we have a staff attorney who works for me, and he's a lawyer also. So those are the four legal positions within the clerk's office. Basically, the clerk's office is the first line. Everybody files there. I don't want to spend a whole lot of time. If you have questions about the clerk's office, I can answer those later. But I kind of wanted to let you know the other legal jobs at the court are the reporter of decisions is an attorney and his assistant, and then they have a staff attorney also. So there are three legal jobs in the reporter's office. We also have a legal office, which has two attorneys. They handle some court work, and they also handle the legal work for the building. There are demonstrators out on the front steps. They would be the attorneys that the police would ask whether or not they can arrest the people, things like that, contract disputes, ethical disputes, things, ethic decisions within the justices' chambers they may have. It varies a lot. And so those are two legal jobs there. Then obviously the law clerk positions. Each justice has four law clerks who clerk for 1 year. And then Justice O'Connor, as the retired justice, also is entitled to one law clerk. If you're interested in a clerk position, you basically need to obviously first clerk at a circuit court, and one of the things that I learned since I've been there are feeder judges. For example, Judge Ludick, who's no longer on the bench, was one of them. But there are certain judges on the circuit courts that pretty much send all of their law clerks to the Supreme Court. So if you're going to get a clerkship, you want to find out on the circuit level to those judges the ones that have contact with the Supreme Court likely to get a job. The other thing is that the people who hire the law clerks traditionally are former law clerks. Most of the justices have one former law clerk who does the screening interviews. So you want to try to get to know those people. That's going to be the first way that you get your resume and get an interview. So those are the two tips as far as the law clerk position. As far as how I got where I am, I started out in the Army JAG Corps. I went to GW down the street from here, and I had worked at a law firm during law school and decided that's not what I wanted to do. Wasn't really sure what I wanted to do, but I decided just to go in the Army JAG Corps, something different. I don't come from a military background at all. In fact, my mother is a very liberal Democrat and was completely shocked and aghast that I would go into the military. She's still that way because I'm still in the reserves, and she's counting the days until I hit my 20 years. But the Army Corps, I would highly recommend. They really want people to come in and basically stay for 3 to 5 years. You don't have to make it a career. If you want to, that's fine, but the Army is pretty much a pyramid. You get a lot of captains coming in, and they funnel up to the colonels, and you only have enough jobs for a few colonels. So you go in as a captain, I was a legal assistance attorney, so within 2-3 months after being in the JAG Corps, I had my own clients. I was drafting wills, drafting separation agreements, hands-on experience. I moved into a trial counsel slot, which is like a prosecutor. I had a rape case, had a few other cases that I handled. The Army JAG Corps is nice because there's a lot of people in it and you're not fighting to be a partner, so there's a lot of help there. There's not a lot of backbiting that there might be in a firm, so you have a lot of people who are experienced who can help you. So I found that really good. It's also a large network as far as when you get out getting a job. The clerk of the Supreme Court is a former two-star general in the Army JAG Corps. Is that how I got my job? It helped. Anything like that helps. The biggest thing I can say to you is that contacts help. That's what's going to get your foot in the door. I ran into a person who used to work for me who did not want to use contacts, didn't think it was right and didn't like it. It makes it a lot harder to get a job. I see nothing wrong with calling someone you know or calling a former alumni from your school and saying, hey, I'm interested in working where you are. Are there any positions? Can you help me? People like to help people. If I can help someone, I like to do it. It makes you feel powerful. People like to feel powerful. You know, it makes me feel like I've got something, you know, and it's nice to be able to help people. So, but that would be my first thing. And just, I don't know how much of my 5 minutes left, but another plug, one of the things that really helped me is that when I was in the Army JAG Corps, I got involved in the American Bar Association. And I got involved in co-sponsoring this, the Government and Public Sector Lawyers Division. I also got involved in the General Practice Section because they had a military law committee. The thing I did was I just started working. I worked in the newsletter. I did things. I got involved, and I got to know people. And when I decided to get out of the Army JAG Corps and I found out there was a job at the Supreme Court, couple things. First off, the judge I was clerking for in the Army at that time knew the clerk. He brought me over and had lunch with the clerk. That was getting my foot in the door, getting my face known. Then I knew some people who were fairly high up in the ABA from my work who knew the clerk, and I had them write letters to him on my behalf. So it's all those things, the people you know, the things. I would have never gotten the job if I wasn't qualified, but I have to say I probably got the interview. They didn't really know me because of the contact. And it's the same. I do hiring now. And when we hire people, if somebody knows somebody, you're going to probably, you know, a lot more likely to get the interview. Doesn't mean you're going to get the job, but I'm more likely to interview somebody if I know somebody and they can say so-and-so is a good person, they're hardworking, than just a resume that I know nothing about. So I think you have to really work on the contacts. Just get involved in whatever professional organization you want. The ABA has a law student division. The Federal Bar Association has a few chapters. I'm in the Capitol Hill chapter. We're having a luncheon in May with Chief Justice Roberts, who's speaking. You meet a lot of attorneys who work on the Hill that way. If you come to the meetings, come to the events, we have lunches. So those are the things, if you want to get a job in the federal government or state government, is to start meeting people who are in those positions now, because that's really what's going to help you.
Of course, I mean, we could have paid you to do a better presentation on the value and art of networking, and we'll get back to that too.
Yeah, real quickly, I work for National Labor Relations. Right of workers to bargain collectively with their employers. A lot of times that doesn't go well and charges are filed, and we have about 40 regional offices that litigate those charges. They investigate them, litigate them, and most of those cases end up in Washington. My work involves contempt litigation, which is kind of a strange animal. Believe it or not, there are people, clients, who ignore federal courts. All of our administrative decisions, but they have to be blessed by a U.S. Court of Appeals. When that happens, if they're not compliant with, then my office gets involved and do contempt litigation. So we do everything from sanctioning, fining, imprisoning non-compliers. And in terms of sort of just basic job satisfaction, it's kind of fun to do a job that allows you to work from Washington and other lawyers. Essentially, you're responsible for the compliance with all the decisions that our agency makes, but with the ability and the resources to do good legal work, to go out, to investigate, not to have a client breathing down your neck about whether or not you're spending enough time or not enough time on a case, make your best judgment, always on the right side of a case, which is something that I didn't have when I was in private practice, and then have the chance at the end of the day to sort of really affect justice. So I've been with the board now about 18 years. I decided when I came to town that I would go to the board instead of the Department of Justice because justice had a 4-year requirement. 18 years later and 3 more kids later, it's been a great way for me to balance sort of the legal practice at a fairly high level and also the commitments I have and responsibilities I have with my family. I actually came to town before that as an intern for Gary Hart, so I've got kind of a checkered past. When I went to work for him, he'd just been elected to the Senate, and I had no idea that he was still dating. But it was a great way to learn the town. He was going to give me a job as an elevator operator in D.C., and I showed up at Georgetown to start school. My first day of working for him and supposedly punching elevator buttons, they voted my job out. So I spent 2 years writing letters instead, and then had a social job to get to law school. Went back to Colorado for law school, and then practicing small firm, did everything. Never liked the fact that I didn't know anything about anything that I was doing. And those were in the days when lawyers didn't sue each other as frequently as they do now. I don't know what I'd do now. Frightened to death. Then I spent a year working for a congressman, and because I had the misfortune of running for the House in Colorado and losing by 300 votes, I used to think that was a big deal till Florida in 2000, so I don't talk about it anymore. But I've really enjoyed the work that I've done, and not only have I been able to do the legal work that I've wanted to do, Cynthia and I were talking about some of the work we've done with pro bono over the years, I've been able to spend the last 10 years running my agency's pro bono program, and at the same time have been given the opportunity to work with justice, sort of shepherding the other agencies in the government to sort of give another aspect to legal practice that you sometimes don't get in working for the federal government. And that's the ability to all of us get to work on some interesting cases that have a pretty big impact. But it's still fun as a lawyer to get back to somebody who's got a problem with whether or not they're going to stay in their home and keep their families together for a couple of weeks, or something that's very hands-on, and the satisfaction you get from that client contact is something that you often don't get in working for the government.
Thank you.
The pizza's here.
Everyone stay seated, and then we'll just pass the slides around. Take one, more people showed up and registered. So that's why it's important to register, so we have an idea how much of this stuff we get. Anyhow, you're not here for the pizza, right? You're here for the time. If I may, it's interesting, actually, of the group, Cynthia is the only one that started off with the federal government, albeit in JAG, which is a different kind of beast, if you will, sort of, in terms of federal careers generally. Maybe you could comment, starting with Dan, working on the way down, that if you had any interaction, or if you have any words of wisdom with respect to, is it advisable to start your career with the private sector or another sector before going into the federal government, or it just happens that this is how it came upon each of you?
Well, at my agency, it was always a premium if you'd had private experience. I don't know why that is. I guess the assumption was that some of those jobs, depending on where you were working, were more competitive, and that was sort of a screen for you that sort of made it at a certain level. I think the only reason they hired me, because I was the fact that I'd done a lot of trials. And that's something that seems so exotic now, that lawyers that have actually tried a case. Cynthia didn't have, of course, but the rest of us, it's very rare to try a case anymore. So that was a big deal. So that might have been more important. So if I had work as a district attorney and some other experience where I would have tried cases, that would have made a bigger difference.
So if I'm out there in the audience interested generally in labor and employment law issues and maybe collective bargaining, should I look at the ILRB as a place to begin my career, or should I take a step back and think about a boutique for practice or a law that will give me a different set of skills before I knock on your door?
Well, I've emphasized the work that I've done at the board, but I think that for someone who really wants to make a career doing labor law, what we've described traditional labor law, really understanding the statute and how it applies and relationship in the workplace between management and labor, another part of agency that I'd recommend to you would be to either work on our board side, which is where we have a five-member board that essentially writes our administrative decisions. So that tends to be very intricate legal work. That would give you a great breadth of experience in terms of the issues that you're likely to face as a private practitioner. And also, we have a division of advice that deals with more esoteric legal issues, more where the law is going in labor law. Our statute is fairly slim, I think it's 20 pages, but we now have 500 volumes of about if you really want to get into the nuances, that's what you like. I, of course, have no interest in that at all. I'd be content with litigation I can never imagine, because you've got a judgment that the judge has already ruled on, and it's not being complied with. Now, you have to be clever about how you get them to comply. That's the interesting part. But in terms of the legal issues involved, if it's too complicated, I can't prove a contempt case anyway. So.
And so you commented on it, but anything else you want to add?
There are some internships for elite law students at the court. There are actually only two positions, and they're on USA Jobs if you go to that website, and you just do agency search and go down to Supreme Court. There's one in the reporter's office, which is going to be a lot of flight checking, so if you're on law review or something like that and have that experience, that would probably be good. And the other one is in the library. It'll take someone who's a law student also. So those are the only two internships we have. The only thing I would say about private versus public, which I think these two kind of touched on, is in where you are in life. If you're young and don't have a family yet, then you might start in the public private sector where you can work a lot of hours. I just know I have Dan said he has three kids. I have one and
four now.
Three more.
I only have one, but I think we have somebody in our office just left to go to a firm, and yeah, he's making a lot more money, which sometimes is hard to swallow. He's younger than me. He's making tons more than me. But somebody ran into him at Home Depot, and he said that was his first day off in 3 months. And he's got three kids, so he probably never sees them. And the law firm puts out dinner every night for everybody in the firm because everybody's expected to be working until 7 or 8 at night. So I think it's a choice of what you want in your life. You're not going to make as much money, but you make enough. I mean, my salary is enough to certainly to live on in this area. And I get to go home in normal hours and take off during the middle of the day if my son has an event. So I think those are things you need to weigh off.
Sure.
A lot of the attorneys that I work with in my division did lateral over from private practice, I think, for a similar reason. A lot of us were at larger law firms working a lot of hours and wanted to do something a little more meaningful, have a little bit more responsibility, and get to go home at night. That being said, I have to say our agency, the Bureau of Competition, has always had new attorney hiring, and they do a lot of training and put a lot of effort into recruiting new attorneys to do the antitrust work. Bureau of Consumer Protection just actually started government previously. I just think, a lot of people end up in private practice, quite frankly, the education that you're getting right now, which there's nothing to snarl about doing that at all. I think regardless of where you work, the real key is making those contacts and always working those contacts. Every single job I got led off from the previous one. Some of them came from professors here at AU. Some of them came from someone who knew someone at the last job I worked at. And so it was always making sure whether or not it was my dream job to do my best and build a
emphasis on the job search for the first job right out of the box to be all things. Pay all the money that you need to pay to offer all of the bells and whistles that you're looking for to be in the exact practice area that you want. And oftentimes, you look for that for sure, but oftentimes you have to give up one of those elements or sort of compromise on give and take. Because statistically speaking, it's very, very improbable that the job that you have right out of law school will be your job that you retire with X number of years from now. You see, it's really dynamic, and you want that first job out of law school to be the best job. But you try to meet what the best five metrics as possible, but recognize that there's going to be more, there's going to be growth, there's going to be other interests that block you. So
try to bring that flexibility, that flexible mindset to the doctor. You know, even if it's a counseling session, if you prefer about that, Marlon, would you care to comment on that as well?
Sure. The SEC has the trifecta.
Here comes a hard set.
You know, I actually thought about starting with the SEC. And in many ways, it came down to the education financial system. Schedule to make up any time. Short term, that was a great place for me to start. Certainly, the salary was wonderful. Thinking long term career, I think that starting at the FCC would have been a much better place for me. And I say that from seeing some of the folks that have started at the FCC. The reason is as follows. While I spent a couple of years pouring through documents, doing a due diligence review and analyzing page after page of sometimes relevant, sometimes not so relevant documents, the amount of knowledge that I think I was able to accumulate early on would have been greatly helpful. So something happened along the way. This thing called pay parity happened. Partnership for Public Service and American University Institute for the Study. Anyway, so one of the things that is interesting here is the places for young people. It's a ranking of federal places to work. The SEC is ranked number 2 as the best places to work for young people, 40. It is also highly ranked in pay and benefits. Ranked number 3. I mean, you know, those things that were highly ranked. Number 5 overall. But that tells you that if you're young, it's rated as a good place to work. If you want to become an expert or gain expertise, the level of expertise and the extent to which you'd be able to market yourself. Should you choose to remain in public service, or should you choose to go to private practice? I think you, in that field of law, you will be considered much more of an expert.
Questions from the audience.
With the understanding that you're not an HR specialist, you know, we've heard allusions to a political career before, the career at the NLRB versus specialization in the SEC. So, contrasting, to what extent does specialization matter? I mean, can it be important to keep your foot in the door, say, at the Veterans Association, even though you are an administrator, even though you want to work?
I think interest and commitment to a practice or a field helps. We hire an inordinate number of people who have either been a Peggy Browning Fellow, which is one of our ways to get summer clerks in during the summer. We have a summer clerks program. We have students who intern in our regional offices all over the country. And that proven interest in doing the work, I think, is very important to us, in part because the trade-off in government service historically is that a lot of young lawyers come in, they get trained, and then they go out and make a lot of money. We'd like to hold some of those people. We invest all that training in, so we try to make the environment and the work as challenging as we can to make it interesting for people. But ultimately, it comes down to the kind of decision you're going to make on who to hire. And if you're the person making that choice, and you can talk to somebody you know who's actually worked with a student who's now an applicant for full-time employment, it makes a big difference. It just makes the decision that much easier. And again, all of us are getting lots of resumes, and the question is, how do you get to the top of the pile? And having spent some time and showing that commitment makes a big difference, I think.
And Molly, you're alluded to, you said, talk about having worked in different sector before coming to the FCC. Did your experience, your law school experience in the public sector coming to the FCC,
there aren't a lot of long-term student based degrees out there, so there's not really many people to go to in the private sector. They're working on it. We don't think they're up to stuff here. but there just aren't a lot of people with sort of 10 years worth of data security experience out in the world. So what I was able to do was point to my previous work at U.S. attorney's offices and say, I've always had an interest in working for the federal government. I've demonstrated it in a number of ways. I chose this path for a number of reasons, some of them financial, but long-term, this is where I want to be. So it's something you could do. I always went back to contact. Someone always, inevitably, Washington, D.C. is a smaller town than you think. Someone always knows someone.
Other questions from the audience? Questions for each panelist, any panelist?
There were rumors of a hiring freeze for some time. I've been on the hiring committee for a couple of years, and we have not had the opportunity to hire somebody for some time. Right now, we have a number of positions open, and if you go to our website, there are at least three divisions that have a posting for actual positions we're looking to fill as quickly as we can. And those are in the Division of Corporation Finance, Division of Market Regulation. I believe the Office of Compliance Investigations and Examinations also has positions. And Enforcement may be posting it soon if they haven't already today. So, we have authority right now to fill a number of positions in Washington, D.C. The number is, I think it's approximately 30 people. And of course, we have offices throughout the country, and those offices have their own spot. But let me just take a minute too to say one important thing about the FCC is when you hire full time, each division should apply the enforcement division. They have their own sub group that does the hiring. Likely look fairly different than the candidate that's going to go through the investment management. So look at those postings there online and pay close attention to the description of what it is that the position entails. and kind of grasp and find yourself.
Brings up a very important point, and to the extent the other panelists have experience with it, please comment. But different agencies hire differently. There's no uniform standard that all federal agencies have to follow with respect to how they hire attorneys. Matter of fact, my understanding is that attorney positions in the federal government are valid positions, meaning that you do not have to be posted at U.S. State Office or elsewhere if for EEO compliance purposes. Having said that, agency division precedent, whether or not this way or that way or all the while meaning, some agencies have centralized hiring where you write to one person expressing your interest in the variety of divisions therein. This, as we're hearing throughout the ASCC, a strategy might be to write specifically to that division itself. It's not always that easy to navigate, and you need to do your due diligence with respect to understanding the dynamics of the specific agency you're targeting. If you could share some of that, I think we have information about that with you, about how best and how effectively you apply. And the resources, you've heard USA Jobs announced here, which is the OPM's website, but there are a number of other resources that you can use to identify public sector leaders, public sector NGOs, and courts. Our office puts together a number of a jumpstart series on different industry sectors, and we have a jumpstart your government job search, two-page handout. Again, jumpstart. You know, it's not everything, but it's a good jumpstart. It has a half a dozen plus websites.
And I think all agencies now have a pretty good website. We're doing our best to market because we're doing the best candidates we can. And it's as good a place as any to find out about what we do. The prospect is that's the kind of thing you want to do.
And actually, internally, I sit on both my division's attorney hiring committee, where we hire full-time attorneys to work in the division. I also sit on the Bureau of Consumer Protection Summer Law Clerk Committee, and our summer program is that we hire law students at a bureau-wide level. So that's sort of an example internally about how it really varies. About 100 of them, so there's enough for everyone. So before you leave, feel free to take a look at this. It talks all about the Bureau, and it actually has video that you can pop into your laptop, and it has interviews of current attorneys who work there.
That's impressive.
Yeah, I just wanted to make one more. One important note about the SEC, USA Jobs was mentioned. You're likely not to find a lot of our current job openings on USA Jobs, and this may surprise a lot of people. We use a system called ADU. I forget what it stands for. But if you go to our website, there's a link for employment, and you've got to go to this. So even, for example, if you email your resume to someone at the SEC, you have not submitted your resume. You've got to go to person at first is set up. But once you set it up, you can apply to a number of positions, as they come up, or tailor it to different positions. And I always do recommend that people tailor their materials to whatever their job they're seeking. But I wanted to make the disclaimer just that if you're looking for jobs at the SEC, USA Jobs may not be the first resource for that particular agency. The right side. No, sorry.
No, there are programs out there. In fact, I don't know if Karen or Sarah may be able to speak to them. I know there's some loan forgiveness programs. Some of the federal agencies have them. Also, I know some state government agencies have loan forgiveness programs or they have certain incentives. The Army JAG program, it changes all the time. I went way back in, back when I graduated, a number of years ago, when I went in, they gave you a 3-year deferment on my loan. So I didn't have to pay, start paying on my loans for 3 years. No, then they started giving people, I think, $20,000. But I know the Government Public Technology Division on their website, I know, has information about the loan forgiveness program. There are also private organizations that will sponsor students who are graduating. I know I saw something recently in the DC bar where somebody who graduated from law school was, got a grant to work in a public defender's office or a legal aid office. So there are things out there that you have to search for. Them.
Well, it's still a public interest loan payment program, but it does that from our office. I'm not hardly the expert on the loan payment, but you're right, it does pose a challenge. Yes, right. And just as an anecdote,
how good are you?
It's not bad. I'm not saying that this is, you know, the strategy you should pursue, but this is an anecdote that sticks out of my head with a long who still looking for work upon graduation, not an unusual dynamic, but ended up doing temporary, getting paid money. Paid off, I think, $40,000 of his student loan debt, and just as a matter of coincidence, the agency, actually it was a local prosecutor's office, his application has sort of finally come through towards the new year, and at this point in his career, a position that he couldn't have afforded upon graduation, taking that bill. Not to say again that that's going to be your strategy going forward, but life happens, and sometimes you can engineer things creatively.
And some of the public sector jobs actually pay more than you think. Just a little, I was down in Miami for the ABA meeting, and our chair this year is the city attorney for the city of Miami, and he was telling me he was going to hire people. Miami city attorney's office, and they were paying like almost $200,000. I never, no idea that you. And that's more. I know. So you know. Yeah, so it just depends on the office and how much money they have, so.
We'll go to Miami.
Yeah.
There was a very interesting, the opinion letter from the president of the current DC Bar president, Jim Sandman, mm-hmm. who is a former managing partner at Allen & Porter, and I used to work for Jim, so I always read his This month he was talking about the New York law firm that $100,000 a year, and,
The new bar.
Which was the new bar, and it was certainly shocking. And, you know, Jim sort of went through the various reasons why he found this to be problematic. But in the end, one of the things that he recommended was, regardless of what you do, manage your debt, live below your means, give generously, and then get to do what you love. So sometimes, for some people, that means you don't get to do what you want to do straight off. I know I always wanted to work in the public sector, and I simply couldn't afford it. So I lived like I lived in law school for 2 years while working at a law firm. I continued to eat peanut butter sandwiches, and in 2 years I had my law firm, my loan paid off, and I was done. And so I left. No one's expecting you to take $100,000 a year and pay off $150,000 in loans.
But the federal jobs usually are at the mid-50s.
Yes, certainly.
And if you go to the SEC, the FDIC pays parity kind of, you know, banking and financial, CFTC I think has parity. What do you know what the starting salaries are there? They're probably in the low six, they're a bit higher.
I think we
starting that high now. Okay, but parity's even higher. So that's not chump change, folks. That's something that I would think most, even with the six-figure debt to service, folks could hammer out. There was a question there, I'll get to you. Yeah.
I have a question for just all of the panelists. As I'm sort of doing my job search, even though the pay is completely unreasonable, do any of you have any thoughts on the transitional management fellows program?
PMF? Presence?
Yeah.
Yeah,
they sell it to law students and it's like this thing that every single federal agency hires from a new about
Mrs. Grayson
and everything.
That was
a blank look. So.
Well, that doesn't mean, PMF is, and I can't speak too knowledgeably about it, although other than to say, again, some resources back here with my colleagues. It is a pretty compelling program if you can get accepted to it. My basic fundamental understanding of it is that you're, in essence, it hires presidential management fellows, hires graduate students from the MBAs to the philosophy degree, in certain sectors, law being one of them. And it puts you on a fast-track management trajectory into the federal government, and you're sort of guaranteed a position in the federal, not guaranteed, can you check this one little device?
Sure, it's actually, it's
Claire Raj with our office.
It is a program for all graduate schools, so there aren't traditional attorney jobs, and that should have been something that was said from the get-go. But students can craft policy jobs that involve their legal degree, but it's not as though once you become a PMF, there are all these jobs that are for traditional, like traditional, what you would think of as being attorneys. It's more for students that are interested in management positions or policy-type positions. And actually, a lot of the dual degree students that are SIS, JD students, study cell students end up applying and doing fairly well. And then once you're a PMF fellow, it doesn't guarantee you a job. You have to go to the PMF job fair with agencies that are holding positions for PMF. And
I understand all of that. I guess I was just more thinking like of people who are working in the government, like what is their impression of themselves? You know, is it a job to aspire to?
I think most people in the federal government wouldn't have exposure to PMF, right. So they wouldn't.
That's a big thing.
Isn't necessarily what you would be.
Yeah.
I mean, that's not exactly what the program is crafted for, is for attorney positions. So they may not have much interaction with PMF.
But we do have alums that we can put you in touch with if you personally want to outreach to them.
I think your panel consists of three independent agencies. We're not a traditional mega department. We're all independent creatures of stature. I mean, so we're much smaller. It's much less likely to happen.
That's a great question. So it's really funny our panel here. Taken aback a bit by everyone starting with the Cynthia starting with the private sector and then moving into the public. It's more traditional for folks to start out with the public and then move into the private, and that's a dynamic we see more of.
We had a staff attorney that used to work for me. He handled all of the emergency applications at the court. He moved into the private sector. And the one thing I can say from his job search is that you're going to have to, whatever job you're doing in the public sector, you need to be doing the same skill things that you would do in a law firm. In the clerk's office, we don't do a lot of substantive law. I don't do a lot of legal writing. And when he came out when looking for a job, he'd been only at the court for 3 years, and a couple of the law firms just flat out told him no, because he hadn't been doing legal research as much, he hadn't been doing all these things. And I also spoke with someone else in our legal office who's thinking about moving back into the private sector, and she was saying the same thing. The law firms want to see that you're doing the things that you're going to be doing for them. So, you know, some of the agencies that these guys work at, I think you probably would be doing some similar things, or doing trials, or, you know, preparing motions that might be similar. But I think the law firms, they don't screw around. Either you got to have the skills they want, they're not interested really in training you so much.
There was, Cynthia made a great, I'm sorry, sure, please.
Very easy to move from the SAT.
That was all the time.
And it's not difficult, but it probably also, mirrors the economy, folks, market demand for things. You know, when I graduated from law school, the SEC was sort of like, but now, over the last decade, well, to work at the SEC right out of school is very attractive. So, you know, real estate market's up, bankruptcy's down, real estate's down, IPOs are going wild, part of what IM, I guess, is in action, but, securities fraud is going out there, enforcement's in action, so the government is not a static entity. Market fluctuations will affect And political administrations and their priorities will affect who's hiring, who's not, who's getting money, who's not, who's being hired politically, who's not. So be cognizant of that. Recognize that the private sector, that's equilibrium in the federal government is sort of doing its own.
Somebody's graduating like this year. I know the Army JAG Corps has a reserve, the reservist, too. You don't have to go active duty. And right now they're offering, I think, a $10,000 bonus to anybody who signs up for the Army JAG Corps reserve. And so if anybody's interested, you could, I can give you any information you want, or you can contact the JAG Corps. But that would be something, because it requires, I think, a 3 months where you have to go to a classes for 3 months. You don't have to go do any weapon things or anything for 3 months. But you learn things. You're not going to be shipped to Iraq or anything like that. But you would need that break. You'd have 3 months where you'd have to do something. But they will give you $10,000, and then you're obligated to serve the Army JAG Corps. I think usually it's for 6 years, I believe. But that's something, it's an option too, as far as, segueing into and makes contacts with people in the JAG Corps and things.
It also, just to be aware, to the extent that you're a junior lawyer and you're in the government, one thing that actually makes you very marketable compared to some of your counterparts is you will have done things that they could not do in a law firm. I worked in a pretty small practice group, and there was no way I was going to be taking a deposition when there were 4 partners, 3 junior partners, 7 senior associates, and junior associates that were more senior than I was. Everyone would have had to die before I could have done it, and it wasn't going to happen. My colleagues who were in the federal government or worked for some in public service had done their own trials. They had done all their depositions. They brought everything from start to finish, and they had basic skill set that was that exceeded mine by leaps and bounds. Now when I look at my colleagues who are in private practice, they're still sort of slogging away, getting a little bit more down and drop the motion, but I handle all my investigations alone from start to finish. And if nothing else, even if sort of the special, even if you're getting expertise in the area that you may or may not want to talk about into the private sector, you're certainly going to get a basic skill set that's really marketable compared to your junior counterparts in private practice.
I want to respect your time as well. I want to throw out another question here, if I may. Cynthia talked about, and Molly as well, networking. And your experiences, and perhaps you don't have, well, Cynthia does experience with it, the value of networking. Does it help to bring your resume, to make a contact with the SEC, the NLRB, build an ally therein, and have them, if they do offer, present your resume as a candidate versus going in through the front door with everyone else? Can you comment on any of those dynamics, or is it maybe you can't?
I can speak of my own experience. I was trying to move from Colorado to Washington because my wife's father was sick, so I had sort of a tight time. Friend who had worked part time for somebody who in turn sort of knew somebody at the board. And I found later on that this individual at the board wasn't respected at all. But that was my entree into the agency. It didn't make any difference. It was the fact that I had a chance because of him. He talked a lot and knew a lot of people, and he'd been there a long time. And because of it, the need at the agency at the time was so great that I interviewed for 5 different parts of an agency that normally doesn't hire that frequently, certainly at the headquarters offices. And I ended up getting a choice of 2 or 3 spots, and not because of the quality of the entree, but the fact that there was any entree. And at the time, they had to go find my application, which was lost somewhere in some back into the system. I think I ended up having to send it all over again, because having gone through the front door, that got absolutely nowhere. It certainly wasn't for show, but it wasn't the way the individual managers were hiring. So ultimately in the government, I think you have to have a champion. And in my case, I had at the very end, I really was debating between justice doing tax litigation, which I guess will take almost anybody because they make you fly all over the place. At least 3 years ago, that's how I did it. Or working at the board. And the only way I could get the board to finally commit to it was to tell them I had an offer from the other agency. And then it was an offer. So the other part of this process that we haven't talked about very much is how slow most government agencies are in making those decisions, in part because they don't have to, and also in part because the budget situation is always so precarious. I mean, we still don't have a budget for this year. We really haven't had a real budget process in the government for 20 years. So and all the management. It's easy to hide behind if you don't want to make those hard choices on hiring.
Molly, did you want to add to that?
No, I think Cynthia was right in saying that knowing someone may not get you the job that's going to open the door. When I interviewed law students a few weeks ago, I had 11 slots and I had 412 applications. When I got an email from someone in the house and said, I put them on my slot because I had someone who could vouch for them. And it was a really good way to weed through people. You know, I've had...
And even if they don't vouch for you, I think it's the fact that you're going to stumble into that same person and they're going to ask you the question and you're going to be sort of embarrassed if you don't say, well, you had 12 slots, you wouldn't even interview them? It's the human dynamic. It's not fair and it's not rational, but it's real about how people work with each other.
And, you know, again, my current job, I happened to work at a law firm where one of the assistant directors had been an associate for 7 years, and so we just happened to be chatting, and she said, oh, hold on a second, I just got an email, we're going to be posting a job tomorrow, email me your resume. And I did, and then she called me the next day and said, hey, why don't you come to my interview? And it sort of pops you to the top of a huge swell. You know, as working on the attorney hiring committee, we received, I think we had two positions, we received something insane like 600 resumes. It's impossible when you're doing that to even think how you pick out the best people. So if you have someone who internally has said, hey, I used to work with so-and-so, or something that vouches for you, it sort of pops you up to the top.
For those of you that don't have extensive contacts on the inside, there are some of us that will look beyond that.
but there's a way to do it.
I did not come into contacts. I knew nobody. I just kept trying. And, you know, in the end, I think it's already been stated a number of times, but, you know, in the end, you've got to have the skill set and you've got to have something to offer. So, you know, take some time in thinking about how you will draft your resume for that position. Don't just have one resume that you're going to send for every single position. It really won't do you justice. You know, if you're going for a position that is more, say, transactional in nature, transactional, the fact that you've drafted documents you know, related to that is important. But if what you're going to attack controversy, I think the fact that you maybe conducted some depositions is more important, even if those depositions are not in the tax subject. But that you've got the skill set to take draft motions and so on. That may be more important. So, the skill set that you have to draft, and that comes from the more important oftentimes they're not. I'm trying to sort of fit this resume into what the position description is. And ultimately, for most somebody, the resume is really something.
If you do know someone, I know someone at the FTC, I'm an AU alum, you are all AU students, so call Matthew and he'll put you in touch. I mean,
generous offer.
That's one of the ways that you have a whole list of people who went to law school here who do things. I had a federal clerkship. My judge went to American, and so we talked about that and farming tobacco, and off we went to the races. So,
So absolutely, you know, combination of having a skill specific, an agency specific resume that directs and brings to the fore the relevant skills that agency is hiring for, and then to the extent, as Dan labeled it, having a champion connecting with. As Molly said, just any a mentor, a WCL contact or an undergraduate contact, that's a very powerful combination, because if you're just looking at USA jobs, you're like everyone else, and you're one of those 600 people that sends their resume in. But if someone can say, hey, you know what, I know this person, she did outreach to me, she seems like she really has a real motivation to work here, good head on her shoulders, all things considered, her resume looks a lot like this candidate, but this candidate, I really don't know from home wall.
Can I share my best interviewing story?
Wow, please.
The other part of this, once you get the contact, we do a lot of phone interviews for different schools that send interns to us. And one program we have is with Washington University in St. Louis, which is the strangest school because you spend your entire career explaining where you went to law school. But we had a telephone interview with a student who ended up being brilliant. but he had the strangest response to the start of our interview. It was scheduled, he knew it was starting, and he asked us if he wouldn't mind if we would, if he ate his ramen noodles during the interview, because he just cooked them and he was really hungry. Okay. Now, nobody in the world would hire this guy if you take any kind of objective stand. He didn't seem terribly interested, didn't seem like he really wanted to do it. But he's turned out to be, he's a brilliant guy, and that's why it's so quirky. So this whole process is completely, I'd recommend the guy to anywhere, because I think he's very bright. He's got a great leadership. He's thinking about everything, you know. But on paper, everything we've told you is exactly what happened. Whole thing is crazy. So you have to be aggressive and keep going at it. Like Ramon says, you go at it a couple times and you find what you want to do and you go after it.
But I wouldn't suggest eating ramen.
No, I wouldn't do that. Gave us a great story.
All right. Thank you.